Hello, hello. Welcome back to A Rip in the Veil, your safe place to discuss everything that makes you feel unsafe. My name is Anna, and today I have something very near and dear to my heart to share with you guys. But first, just to touch on a couple new things. I mentioned last episode that I was looking for some intro and outro music, and I found some on Epidemic Sound, so I added that to my previous episodes. It's not throughout the whole podcast, so hopefully it's not too annoying, but definitely let me know what everyone's thoughts are on that. All right, like I said, so this episode is near and dear to my heart, just mostly because it's really exciting to me and I'm really interested in it. So I mentioned it briefly in my second episode about vortexes. Now, it's a big one, okay? Grab a snack, get a beverage, get comfortable. I was going to save this for a later date, but I couldn't think of anything else I wanted to do more, and honestly, I couldn't stop thinking about it in general. So I was just like, let's fucking do it. We're just going to do it. I am talking about none other than the Bridgewater Triangle, which is like an energy melting pot of weird shit that has sucked me into its swampy heart. So I just think the idea of these pockets of energy are really interesting, and they kind of inherently tracked a good bit of action, obviously with what's happening there, and also people like us that are interested in the action that happens there. It's kind of like one of those, like, what came first, the chicken or the egg debates? You know, did the vortex come first and cause all the strange shit, or did the strange shit leave, like, a energy imprint that kind of just, like, lingered there, you know what I mean? That's always been super interesting to me. So I had heard of the Bridgewater Triangle just like kind of occasionally, you know, when you're into spooky shit, you kind of just tend to come across things like that. But I didn't really look into it until maybe last year. And then a couple months ago, I was driving through the night, like it was like 3 a.m. and I was listening to one of my favorite podcasts, And That's Why We Drink. And one of the hosts, Ems, talked about the Bridgewater Triangle, and it just kind of like relit my brain sparks. And also, while I was researching this, I saw that FX announced last fall, like last fall 2019, that they are creating a series based off of the Bridgewater Triangle, which I think is going to be pretty awesome. I usually like FX stuff. I was a pretty big fan of American Horror Story. I think they usually do a good job with the graphics. Usually, I mean, they have a good bit of money, so, you know, it's usually pretty well done, so I'm excited for that. So, we're kind of gonna go over the general history first, and then we're gonna get into, like, the different areas of this triangle, and then we're gonna kind of go over the sightings and the happenings, okay? So, I'm a super visual person, so for those of you who are also very visual, you can make these projects, quote-unquote, on Google Earth, where you can save them and add information and stuff. It's like an interactive map. I made it on Google Earth, and I'm going to try to share it on my Instagram. My Instagram is A-R-I-T-V podcast. And like I said, I'm going to try to share a link to do that there, but if not, I still will post a picture at least of the project. So just a little background, the Bridgewater Triangle is about 200 square miles in southern Massachusetts. The triangle is formed between three towns, Abington, Freetown, and Rehoboth. So I did see on one source, Boston.com. Boston.com said one of the points was Seekonk instead of Rehoboth, but they were pretty much the only site that said that out of like the dozens I looked at. So just to throw that in there, it would extend the triangle a little bit, but most seem to agree on the Abington, Freetown, Rehoboth triangle. I did include Seekonk as a point on that Google Earth project just to provide a visual of what else would be included, because you'll see, you know, if you look at that Google Maps project or Google Earth project, rather, you'll notice there a couple of the points are outside of like the points of the cities. I mean, cities don't usually have like straight boundaries anyway, for one. And for two, I mean, you know, this kind of general area gets a lot of activity. The triangle is just especially famous because there's so much of it concentrated there, but just something to keep in mind. I did include those points on a map just in case anyone was interested, because like I said, I'm a very visual person. So the Bridgewater Triangle was given its name by Loren Coleman. He was a renowned cryptozoologist. And side note, cryptozoologists, so they study cryptids, which are creatures like Bigfoot, Loch Ness, whatever. I know it's considered a pseudoscience or, you know, a fake science, but I still respect them because honestly, someone has to do it. You know what I mean? Think of all the Bigfoot, Yeti, Squatch sightings and the large serpent creature sightings. Someone had to check it out and see if they could get some proof. You know what I mean? Like, giant squid were thought to be a myth at one point until we had a body, you know? So someone has to do it. So cheers, cryptozoologists. So one of the most famous areas, this is what I referenced when I said it sucked me into its swampy heart. One of the most famous areas within the Bridgewater Triangle is Huckamuck Swamp. Now, Huckamuck means where the spirits dwell, but colonial settlers called it Devil's Swamp. The swamp is said to be an future Anna will hopefully edit that mouth fart into a seemingly real fart, like a mouth toot. Okay, so the swamp is an Indian burial ground. The land in this general area originally belonged to the Pocasset Wampanoag tribe. Now, that tribe's land is now down to 227 acres, which make up the Wampanoag Reservation, and that's as of 1939. Before that, they had even less land than that. Something very important to note that is tied into the history of this area is King Philip's War. So King Philip was like the head honcho of the Wampanoag tribe, and he was also known as King Philip. King Philip's War was from 1675 to 1678, but it only lasted in this specific area until 1676. So Huckamuck Swamp is supposedly the final battle site between the English and the Wampanoags. But then I saw another site that said the Wampanoags and the English were working together. I don't know if they really had a choice in that matter, but the chief, Metacomet, who is also King Philip, was killed by his own men, apparently, in Huckamuck Swamp as well. Now, this is another thing I only saw once. You know, there are some conflicting points of information, but just to give you as big of, you know, as full of a picture as I can. So that's a pretty brief history. We're going to get into more of it just kind of as we go through the weird shit that's happened there. But there is so much, you guys, like so much. Like, this is already going to be a fairly long episode. This is the definition of a rabbit hole. Like, if you really just want to send yourself down something where everything you click on online, everything you find just branches off to and leads to something else. And as soon as you think you've found it all, you found something else. I think I got it all, but it's like I almost feel like there has to be something I'm missing. So if you want to send yourself down a rabbit hole, look up the Bridgewater Triangle. It is seemingly endless. Also, something to keep in mind throughout these episodes is I want to try to include the skeptical side of things and give possible debunkings. I love a good debunking, okay? So to me, it just further strengthens the things that we truly can't explain. Like, without the debunking, without that side of things, I feel like it's all just crying wolf and it takes away from any validation of the real true experiences that, you know, some of us have had. And it makes those that do believe that, you know, there is more out there, it makes us seem even more batshit than people already think we are. So that being said, I'm not trying to take away from any experiences or encounters I'm going to talk about. It's just kind of a necessary part of the process, you know. We're going to start with the heavy hitter. So besides Huckamuck Swamp, an extremely famous area inside of the Bridgewater Triangle, doesn't take up the whole Bridgewater Triangle, neither does the swamp, but one of the heavy hitters in this area is Freetown Fall River State Florist. They sell flowers. No. Freetown Fall River State Forest. It's off of Route 24 in the bottom right corner of the triangle. It's like 5,400 acres of weird and creepy shit, okay? starting off pretty mild. There were multiple fires there over the last century, and that is about as mild as it gets. Some believe that it was just natural causes. Some believe that humans were involved. Take it for what it is. That is far from everyone's focus when it comes to this forest. So we'll start with the animal mutilation, sacrifices, and just kind of general occult activity. Now, there are multiple accounts of mutilations that have been investigated by the local police even, and they're thought to be done by a cult. I mean, animals kill for food, right? You know, they're not going to leave a whole lot behind. So I feel like it has to be pretty obvious when it's not the work of an animal, and it's a human that did it, and they didn't use that animal or person as a food source, you know what I mean? There also, unfortunately, have been several human murders and sacrifices as well. So this is the most true crime this episode gets. And that's unfortunately because these are accounts that have been proven true. These are murders and other crimes that have been associated with the park, which is also known to be a dumping ground for bodies anyway. Even if it didn't occur in the forest, unfortunately, a lot of bodies make it there. So in 1978, the body of a 15-year-old Mary Lou Aruda from Rainham was found tied to a tree. Her body was. She was kidnapped 2 months prior, and a James Cater was later convicted of the crimes. In 1987, a man was mistaken for an undercover cop and was murdered. Can you even imagine that? I would hate to be murdered for something that is completely unrelated to me. Like, if you're gonna murder me, do it because I did something wrong. Don't just do it just because. You know, that's rough too. And then 2001, two men were found shot on a road that goes through the forest. And then there's kind of just various other criminal activity, such as just assaults. Just, you know, casual assaults along the path. And, ooh, this is creepy, wires stretched across paths, like off-road motorbike paths, to potentially decapitate motorbikers. Can you even fucking imagine? It's like that girl that went to a amusement park, and she was on one of those drop towers, and there was a loose cable, and when she dropped, her leg got cut off, because her leg, like, got cut off by the cable, because they were moving so fast. Can you even imagine? You and the boys are riding through the forest, and then you're all, you know, yucking it up, and then all of a sudden, everyone's voices just fall flat because their heads fucking roll on the ground. Can you imagine? Like, I can't imagine. I didn't see any reports of anyone actually being decapitated, but that was the thought that's what the wires were for. So, as you can tell, the cult presence was pretty darn heavy in this area. And it's also worth mentioning that even though it's not directly associated with the state forest, there was a string of sacrificial murders called the Fall River Cult Murders that also occurred around this time in 1979 and 1980. So also within Freetown State Forest is Profile Rock. Now, this is the site where King Philip or Metacomet's son died. Now, some paranormal researchers say that there's a strong negative energy here. This area is known for murders, cult activity, and bodies have been found here. It's close to the highway, though. I believe that's Highway 24, or Route 24, rather. So some believe it's just an easy dumping ground for true crime, like murders, real murders. Some believe it's tied to cult activity. Some say that it's caused by a negative energy. So again, chicken or the egg. Does it have an energy that caused these shitty happenings, or is this area especially heavy because all this terrible shit has happened there? So, speaking of awful shit, next stop in this freaky forest is Assonet Ledge. Like ass, like butt, A-S-S-O-N-E-T, Ledge. Or you can use its cute nickname, The Ledge. Now, this is one of the things that just, like, really gets me going. Not, like, gets me going, but gets my brain going. So this is on the opposite end of Freetown State Forest. And people reportedly see spirits go to this ledge and jump, only to disappear, like there's no body, or some just stare at you from the ledge. That's not the only thing that's heavy about it, but don't. It's 80 feet tall and made of granite, yay. So there's literally no chance of survival. So that's awful. But seriously, there is, apparently, there is this just awful feeling of just insanely heavy, dreadful energy. And people report having an urge to jump that they just can't shake. Like, we're not talking about people that sought this ledge out to go commit suicide. These are not historically suicidal people. They just cannot shake the feeling. Now, there's also, so there was a paranormal research group called New England Paranormal Research Group. And this guy, John Brightman, is a part of that group. And he said he broke down atop the ledge, later realizing a spirit had told him to jump or leave. And that's a quote from Boston.com. There have also supposedly been numerous suicides off this ledge, but I can't find any numbers. But when you look into this ledge, people like to say that there have been multiple suicides, but I can't find any real numbers to give you. But just to add to this whole mystery, abandoned cars apparently frequently adorn a sonnet ledge. So who knows where the owners are, or if they're truly abandoned, what happens to the owners. If there aren't all these suicide reports, where did these people go? Like, I don't know. So next we're going to talk about, everybody say it with me, puckwudgies. Yes, puckwudgies. They are a cryptid, so a creature that has been very hard to prove its existence. And puckwudgie is spelled P-U-K-W-E-D-G-I-E. So it's spelled like puke wedgie, but it's actually puckwudgie. So these are troll-like creatures. They apparently have gray, smooth skin, and they are 2 to 3 feet tall. They're known for being mischievous little motherfucking shapeshifters that apparently have, there's multiple sightings. Like, some are just visitors to the area that have reported these things throwing shit at them, startling them on purpose, and even worse, attacking them, like trying to seriously hurt people with weapons, like knives, or throw them off of a damn cliff. Are you fucking kidding me? These little So anyway, apparently these are like masters of magic. And just to remind you, these things apparently shapeshift, so, you know, fuck us, right? Those are all things within the Freetown Fall River State Forest. Now, there are a couple other accounts and things close to it. There are even some alien encounters or ET UFO encounters associated with the forest, but we'll touch on those in a little bit. So next we're going to talk about Copy Cut Road. And this is something, if you're following along with me on the map, or if I'm able to post the interactive link, this is also another, all the roads are also marked on there. So this is Copy Cut Road. It's nearby in Assanet, because Assanet, even it's a ledge and it's also a little town. So nearby, some have reported a truck driver on this road following like super close and driving people off the road, driving erratically, flailing its arms, honking its horn, going fucking bananas, and then it just vanishes. So that was really rude. But some locals claim to have never heard this happen. So is it made up? Are they hiding something? Is it just not as well known? I don't fucking know. Who's to say? And then next on our Bridgewater tour, we are stopping by Dighton Rock. So this rock was, it's not just a rock. It's a fucking 40-ton boulder that was originally in the Taunton River. And Taunton's like in the middle of the triangle. So it's a big-ass boulder that was originally found in the river with numerous symbols, petroglyphs and drawings, geometric shapes, stuff like that. No one has been able to decode it or find the origin of it, but they did move it. So now it's like more on display. But it's actually pretty cool. I would definitely recommend looking up pictures of that and also what I'm going to talk about next. So it's another rock. It's called the Solitude Stone. There's just so much weird shit around here. So this is actually a direct quote from one of the websites. It's funny, this was a little bit harder to find information on. It was frequently mentioned, but not frequently explained. Maybe I just wasn't looking in the right places. But this is pretty much an exact quote from a site called Atlas Obscura. So they said, "Lost for nearly a century beneath moss and overgrowth, the stone, the solitude stone, There's a 150-year-old inscription thought to be carved by the Reverend Reverend Timothy Otis Payne of the New Church of Jerusalem, a Christian sect founded on the principles of the occultist Emanuel Swedenborg, whose philosophies purportedly influenced Freemasonry. In his Doctrine of Correspondences, Swedenborg asserted that the physical world was the result of spiritual causes, and the laws of nature's reflection, and the laws of nature are reflections of spiritual laws. Sorry, that quote was a little messed up. The mysterious inscription on this stone reads, "All ye who in future days walk by Nucatesset stream, love not him who hummed his lay, cheerful to the parting beam, but the beauty that he wooed in this quiet solitude." So, I honestly can't fucking tell you what that means, but that's what it says. Okay, great. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk. Next, we are talking about the hornbine or whorebine. I found it in a couple different spellings, so we're just gonna alternate them, okay? Great. So this is a one-room schoolhouse in Rehoboth, so this is like the bottom left-ish, because that's the, Rehoboth is like the bottom left point of the triangle. It was built in the 1840s, and it was open until 1937. Now, there are apparently reenactments held in the summertime, like people dress up whole nine yards, so people say that this could be an explanation, but visitors do apparently hear voices and laughter, but, I mean, outside of reenactment time, so, you know, who's to say. But apparently there are also apparitions in 19th century clothing, and that's the part that people do get a little bit, you know, there's a little gray area, because they're like, oh, what if they just saw a reenactor on their lunch break walking through the, you know, who knows, whatever. But some do believe the activity was kind of awakened in 1968 because they renovated it, and it kind of, they think it might have stirred some things up. So you would actually visit this schoolhouse occasionally throughout the year on Sundays, or you can actually make an appointment with them, which is actually pretty cool. So next we're going to talk about something I'm super excited about. I think it's just because I've always really liked birds. So the idea of a giant bird is terrifying and exhilarating at the same time. You don't understand. I really like birds. So we're talking about thunderbirds. They're giant birds or pterodactyl creatures with like 8 to 12 foot wingspans. I actually watched a YouTube video. It's from West Bridgewater TV on YouTube, and they did a Halloween special about all the folklore and all the stories regarding the Bridgewater Triangle. And one of the guests that spoke on that show was Kristen Evans. She's a Bridgewater Triangle historian that's been studying the place for like 15 years or something like that. And she had an encounter where she was driving down the road, and a giant egg falls onto her windshield. And she's like describing this encounter, and she's saying she got out, and there was this like slimy yolk, and there were giant pieces of shell. Like she was like giving this a size reference with her hand, and she's like, literally, we're talking like, she's giving like cantaloupe size pieces, okay? Like not like a ball shape, but like if you can imagine, like, what is that, the circumference of a cantaloupe. This isn't good. Like a dinner plate. Like, you know what I'm trying to say. It was big ass pieces, okay? Big ass pieces of shell with yolk all over her windshield. So if that's not strange enough, the next day her mother is like, oh my god, girl, you gotta hear this. Her mom and her friend were sitting in the backyard and saw like some giant pterodactyl type creature like crashing through the trees. Like the trees were still broken and everything. Now, I wish they would have taken pictures. I don't know exactly when this was. I can't remember how old the lady said she was, this lady Kristen. But it's one of those things, it's like, man, like, it's so hard to get proof of these things that when there is physical evidence left behind, why didn't you capture it? Maybe it was before easy access of cameras like that. Like I said, I don't remember the time period that this was in. but that's some crazy shit. But again, tying back to what I said in that second episode about vortexes, I mean, I feel like some of these creatures that we see as so strange are just ones we haven't, maybe we just haven't discovered them yet. Like, gorillas were in that category. Like I said earlier, giant squid were in that category. People thought they were myths. We just didn't have a body yet. So maybe one day we're going to find that these fairly close, you know, relatives to dinosaurs have just been hanging out and getting by. They've been somehow able to survive. And maybe one day we're going to find a body that proves all of that. So who knows? That's so interesting to me. But again, like I talked about in that vortex video, is it like, oh, they're traveling and they're using that energy to get around? Or are they just laying low because that's where they, you know, that's where they migrated to survive? You know, that's where they, how they adapted to survive. So that's another one that just like, that really interests me. So next is one of my favorites, the alien, UFO, kind of just general ET sightings. So in 1974, Ronald Reagan was in an aircraft over Assinet Ledge. Remember, I said we were coming back to it. Well, here we are. He was with Air Force Colonel Bill Painter, and a few other people were in the aircraft as well. And another aircraft like pulled up on them real quick and was riding their ass. And then they were flying all erratically, and then shot up at a 40-degree angle and just, boop, disappeared. Not only were there multiple witnesses, but they were also reputable witnesses. I mean, it's the fucking president. Apparently, Reagan even told the chief of the Wall Street Journal at the time about this encounter. So that's one of my personal favorite UFO encounters because of the people that saw it, you know? And apparently Reagan was pretty open to it because, you know, he spoke about it. He didn't try to just sweep it under the carpet. Is that the sweep it under the rug? Put it under the rug? Whatever. Okay. So now this is another direct quote from roadtrippers.com. They kind of just encompass very briefly all of the other UFO sightings. It was just nice and concise. So I did quote them. But like I said, it's from roadtrippers.com. They did a really nice in-depth article about the Bridgewater Triangle that I very much appreciated. And they had some good sources too. So this is kind of like a list of the other UFO sightings according to roadtrippers.com. So they say a few key dates to keep in mind with the Bridgewater Triangle. In 1760 was the date for the very first documented UFO report in the entire world. It was sighted directly over the Bridgewater Triangle. Then in 1908, local papers reported another UFO sighting. That in 1968, several witnesses allegedly saw a large orb floating in trees in the woods of Rehoboth. Then in the 1970s, which was, you know, as you can tell, this was kind of a hot time for a lot of activity, it's died down in recent years. Why? Who knows? But in the 1970s, UFO sightings were frequently reported in area newspapers, even. In fact, in 1976, two UFOs were seen by witnesses to land along Route 44 in Taunton. A Bridgewater policeman also reported seeing a UFO in 1994 in the town of Raynham. So that's crazy. I love when these encounters come from, you know, not only policemen, but these, you know, the fucking president. You know, those are usually, they are trained to base everything off of only fact, only things that are right in front of them, you know, especially think of a police officer and evidence and solving crimes and things like that. So when they have something they truly can't explain, I find it really interesting. So we're going to circle back to this Huckamuck Swamp. So there have been a lot of Bigfoot and Yeti sightings here. Most of these have been seen around Huckamuck Swamp, and apparently they're usually pretty chill. But there was a time in the 70s where farm animals were being killed, and according to the book Weird New England, they attribute this to Bigfoot. Now, there was another guy on that YouTube show, Alack, on that YouTube channel, West Bridgewater TV. He's actually a security officer, and his name is Mark Colicosis, maybe? So he actually does some paranormal investigating, and he said he has gotten some, you know, interaction. But he believes that some of these sightings in more recent years could just be due to hunters and camouflage. It's a common hunting area when the season's right. And depending on what clothing they're using, what suits they're wearing, he believes that some of these might just be attributed to that. Like I said, I think it's really important for us to consider the real possibilities, the real explanations for these events, because if anything, it just strengthens the things we truly, truly cannot explain or debunk. Now, this same Mark guy tried to summon Bigfoot, apparently by banging a branch on a tree. I don't know the origin of that. He doesn't know the origin of that, but apparently him and his buddies are out there banging on trees with a stick. They didn't get Bigfoot, but they did get some EMF activity where, like, he was able to, he looked back at his EMF, his electric magnetic field detector, and they were able to communicate and, like, a spirit answered questions through it. So if you want to hear more about his experience, definitely check that video out. Again, that's Wes Bridgewater TV. It's their Halloween special. So we're getting towards the end here, guys. The final thing we're going to talk about is just the general kind of paranormal activity. And the lights. Now, the lights are a very common topic when it comes to the Bridgewater Triangle. These unexplained light phenomenon, some people call them spook lights. That Mark I was just talking about, he doesn't really believe in the spook lights. He thinks they're kind of over-exaggerated or false. You know, it could be bugs, it could be whatever, it could be like light bouncing off of other things. But the people that have seen them, like, stand by it 150,000%. So, Coleman, the cryptozoologist, he apparently traced paranormal events in the area back to the 1760s, which is fucking forever ago. The first paranormal event he found was documented in the morning of May 10th, 1760, where multiple witnesses saw a sphere, like a bright-ass sphere of fire in the air. Like they said it was brighter than the sun. So not all the lights that people see are that strong, that, you know, that crazy. That same, my dog just shook, you could probably hear him. He's waking up. His name is Ollie and he's a little wiener dog. So that same Kristen lady I was talking about earlier said something ran in front of her car. Man, she does not have good luck driving in this area. Or maybe, honestly, if you've lived in an area like this your whole life, stuff like this has probably happened so many times that you just don't even, it's just like a normal, like, oh, I'm going to the grocery store and saw a puck wedgie. Oh yeah, I went out to dinner and saw a UFO, you know? It's just the use. It's just normal here in Bridgewater. So she had something run in front of her car. And she said it moved in a geometric pattern, which is very interesting. She said it was made of light and not an animal or a person. Like, it wasn't, like, a body, I guess? Like, it wasn't, like, a physical, like, skin sack? Oh, God. I wish I didn't say that. I might cut that out. We'll see. But it moved in a geometric pattern. It was made of light, and it wasn't an animal or a person. But, see, these local opinions really seem to contradict each other, so it's hard to tell. Now, there's just general paranormal activity, as you can imagine. One of the more famous sites being Taunton State Hospital, where people report being touched on the shoulder and things like that. Now, apparently, parts of the hospital were used for satanic activity in the 60s and 70s, which is just, you know, great. If anything, for some reason, that freaks me out more that a hospital was a source of satanic activity, like it was a place for occult activity. How do you know that the surgeon operating on you is really a surgeon? How do you know you're not being fucking sacrificed? Like, can you imagine you wake up and, like, you're missing organs because they were sacrificed, and you think, I don't know, you think you got, like, a gastric bypass and you're about to start, you know, dropping them pounds, and then you realize your liver's gone, you know? Who's to say? That, for some reason, freaks me out more than just, like, satanic activity anywhere else. Other accounts in this general area, because, like I said, this triangle kind of encompasses more than just, like, the exact, you know, triangle that you can make between the three towns. This general area is kind of just creepy-deaky. So, a couple other roads that experience activity in the area. One is Route 44. and there's a male hitchhiker with long red hair that is said to be seen, and then he disappears. And there's also a ghostly apparition on Route 138 near Huckamuck Swamp. So again, everything seems to kind of like gravitate and come out of Huckamuck Swamp or that forest. And again, what came first? The creepy shit or the bad juju? You know, who's to say? That was a long one, you guys. That was a lot of information. I tried to get through it as quickly as possible, just not stay stuck in one place too long. There are definitely a couple things like Puckwudgies I'd like to kind of touch back on a little bit more. I would also like to go over the Fall River cult murders a little bit in a little bit more detail. It was a series of three murders, if I remember correctly. And I, especially with true crime, I feel like we should keep talking about it because it kind of helps keep those people's stories alive in a way. And I definitely don't want all the other weird shit that happens in this area to outshine, you know, somebody that lost their life due to all the creepy shit that's happened there. So we'll definitely revisit that at a later date. But of course, if you have any recommendations, if there's anything that I talked about in this episode or any past episodes that maybe you want me to go into more detail on, or you have any questions I can address, my email is aritvpodcast@gmail.com. Feel free to share me them stories and make any suggestions. But I think that's enough to digest for now. So until next time, friends.